I'm going to quickly introduce our panelists, who are lovely, and I'm so glad that they're here. And then I'm going to ask you guys to give a little brief description about yourselves in two breaths, if you can, just keep it short and simple. So we have Marcia Parlo, who's the managing editor of New England Review. We have Stephanie Geschwind, thank you, mm-hmm. who's the editor at Colorado Review, and Ellen Duffer, who is the managing editor at Plowshares. So if each of you could talk about yourselves just for a second.
Sure. I'm Marcy Parlow, the managing editor at New England Review, and I started in book publishing and moved both north and out of book publishing and into Lit Mags, because Lit Mags now do what book publishing used to be able to do, which is publish wonderful stories that we love just because they're wonderful stories and we love them.
I'm Stephanie Geschwind, so I'm at Colorado Review. I've been there for 18 years. Before I was at Colorado Review, I used to work for Indiana University Press in the production department. And then I became managing editor at Colorado Review, and in 2003 I became the editor. And I run an internship for graduate students, and we work on literary publishing skills. Actually, we work on publishing skills. My goal is to send them out into the publishing world, and if they get jobs at literary magazines and presses, awesome, but I just want them to find work and be happy. So.
Yeah, Plowshare shares that goal. We have an internship program also. I'm the managing editor. I started off as an intern, actually. I was an intern for a year, then left, moved to New York for a summer, came back, was an assistant for a couple months, and then became the managing editor.
Lovely. Okay, thanks. So we're going to try and make this a conversation today so that we can talk to each other, talk to you, and answer all the questions we can. So let's just start off with all of you telling us how you offer your digital subscriptions, if it's a subscription program, if you log in, if it's you do it through that. So yeah, let's start with Marcy.
Sure. We created ebooks for the first time about one volume ago, so they're fairly new to us, and we found a publisher who would do the conversion for us. The challenge is figuring out how to fulfill a subscription. It's an easy, easy thing to send off a single issue. So right now we're handling it very manually. We get an order and we email it out. Looks like it comes automatically, but it does not. So that's a question I have for you guys and you guys, how you handle a full subscription. And we offer, like everybody, a combination, individuals. We find pricing isn't as huge a barrier as you might think, but fulfillment is.
Let's see. So we offer a digital subscription to Colorado Review. It's a PDF. And so I'm very interested to hear if that's what other people are doing, if they want. One of the early ways or early reasons we started doing it was we run the Colorado Prize for Poetry. Everybody who enters gets a subscription, but I've always said, yeah, that's to U.S. addresses only. It was just cost prohibitive to send a subscription to France or, you know, any place else. And actually one of the interns said, well, you could send them a digital subscription, which was just, it's a wonderful thing about interns. Sometimes they have amazing ideas. And I thought, yes, we could do that. So, and I now offer it as a, it's not just if you enter the Colorado Prize for Poetry and you live in a foreign country, you get a digital subscription. It's a choice, and some people who live domestically choose the digital option as well. So we'll just export those addresses from Submittable, and then I put them into a MailChimp. Is anybody using MailChimp? Okay. So, yeah, we put them into a little MailChimp campaign, and then three times a year we send out a PDF of the issue to those subscribers. On our website, in our bookstore, if you want to order an individual copy, we also offer a digital option there, and that's a kind of a manual process. If we get an order via PayPal, it comes to us in our email, and I really like to fulfill that as immediately as possible, but sometimes an order will come in Friday night and I'm gone and we don't fill it until Monday, and I think it's confusing to people because they expect, like, well, where's the link that I'm going to get to download? And we don't have that. We just mail it as soon as we see that we've got an order as quickly as we can. So
I was just going to say, have you tried, do you guys use Submittable for subscriptions? Has anybody mm-hmm. done that? Because that's what we're doing, is taking all our subscriptions and individual orders. And if somebody orders an individual ebook, you can create an auto reply that sends the PDF, so you don't have to actually send it.
Okay.
So
great.
But
I'm
I need
done.
Your help in subscriptions.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna write that.
Plowshares has kind of evolved over the past few years. We got all of our back issues digitized around by the end of 2013. So by the end of 2013, beginning of 2014, we were able to start sending out digital copies to people who had digital or digital plus print subscriptions. And we were doing it manually for a while too. We were using MailChimp. And when the issue came out, we would send out like a bulk MailChimp to mm-hmm. everyone with it. And then at the end of 2014, we finally launched a new website that we've been working on for like 2 years. And that allows us to host all of our ebook files on the website so people can purchase subscriptions, digital subscriptions, or they can purchase like a print plus digital subscription, and then automatically the file is on their account on our website, which has been so much easier than having to like send it all out manually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so now they can mm-hmm. buy one-off issues on the website. We also just started offering last year a solos digital subscription. Mm. Our solos, for those of you who don't know, are they're long form stories that we publish 9 times a year. It's like once a month during the school year, basically. And it's stuff that doesn't fit in a journal. It's much longer. And they're like $1.99 to $2.99. And we sell them individually, but now we also sell them as like a year volume online, which is great.
Somebody's a question for you.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Jana Marin. I'm the editor and publisher of Under the Gumtree magazine. And I would like to just contribute something to this question, if I may, because I also do a digital subscription, which is delivered by PDF. And I use PayPal and MailChimp. So I just figured this out like a week ago, which is why I'm kind of excited to share. There is an online tool called Zapier, which is effectively like an if this, then that type of back in the background management. It automates a lot of these kind of tasks that you're talking about. So for me, what happens is, if somebody buys a subscription by PayPal, Zapier is the tool that automatically adds them to my MailChimp list, which triggers the autoresponder with their first digital copy. And then that is the list that I use to send the next installment of their subscription. Zapier also takes that PayPal transaction and populates a spreadsheet.
Wow.
Yeah, that's great.
So,
how do you spell that?
I think it's some of those tasks that you're talking about.
Yeah, because building a website, a custom back-end and front-end website with like a customer relationship management platform that like keeps all of your subscriber data in it and all of the files in it, it's really expensive. And we're lucky to be supported by Emerson College, so we were able to do that over the course of a couple of years, but that's really not feasible for a lot of smaller publications. So things like that are great, because this is like it's a coding problem, making all of this automated.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Zapier, Zapier?
It is.
Okay.
Yep.
Zapier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool, good. So you guys were saying that you have, you send up subscriptions. Why did you decide to have to send out something versus like have a login on your website, to have a PDF, to have it on the page of the website? What's the thought process there when you're trying to decide how to start or how to like which platform you want your digital subscriptions to be on?
We offer it in all formats.
Okay.
So Mobi Pocket, EPUB, PDFs, because it wasn't prohibitively expensive to bring them all in, and I didn't want to just serve one population, and I didn't want to just serve, PDFs have their strengths and weaknesses. The thought process. You know, I'm here to ask you guys, because we're brand new. We are brand new with the digital issues, but we're reaching people abroad. It's a wonderful way to share your journal with somebody, because you can send it off to somebody at effectively no cost to you. So I think I just need to listen to you guys.
I think it really was initially born out of, we already had a PDF, so that was already just sitting there and not doing anything, the PDF that we send to the printer. And I think what we started doing was, and it may have been at a CLMP panel, someone said, well, you can start selling those digitally. You're not doing anything with them anyway. So that was probably how it started. And then, like I said, the intern suggested, well, you could send those to your foreign entrants, and then they would actually be getting a subscription. So the thought process really was, that's what we have right now. We have a PDF, and I don't know if we should be doing something different. For our poetry books, we work with the University Press of Colorado. They are the distributor and marketer for our books. And they offer all of those books as EPUBs, and not the magazine, but the poetry books. And I just send them a PDF. That's what they've requested in whatever platform they're using or whatever it is they're doing. That's the file that they've asked for is a PDF. So there wasn't any thought. I guess it was just, well, maybe one of these days I'll graduate to something else if I should or need to, or when I have time to do that. But right now, I think it sort of works.
Yeah, we offer ours as EPUB and Mobi files. And like I said, we have them on our website, but we also have them on Amazon, Nook, iBooks, Kobo, all of the places. You don't really get much money from a lot of those. Or any of them, really. Amazon doesn't give out much money. But yeah, so we have basically our ebook files. And we like those instead of PDFs because they reflow to fit the screen size.
Mm-hmm.
PDFs generally work. I read PDFs on my phone. I don't care. But yeah, so it'll like, if you're reading it on a tablet, it'll look appropriate, versus if you're reading it on your phone or your computer screen, it'll look different. And luckily, those places that, like Amazon and Nook, they have e-readers that you can download for your desktop or for your phone. It's not like you have to have a dedicated e-reader.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided to, offer it because foreigners often buy them,
mm-hmm.
because we allow our print subscriptions to go overseas, but they have to pay so much more for shipping.
Yes. We charge for that as well.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's not reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So they get digital mm-hmm. copies a lot. And we offer it for cheaper than print too.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And do you find that Amazon and Nook give you a lot more exposure? Is it marketing as well? Are you drawing in people you might not see otherwise?
So
because we just sell directly, so
right.
I'm always curious.
About how it works with the other mm-hmm. partners. Yeah, so for our solos particularly, that's a little bit different, because our solos are always, more recently, they have been accepted into the Kindle Single Store,
mm-hmm.
which is like this part of the Amazon Kindle Store where it's like the front page, and they promote it a little bit more. And by promote it, I mean they just like put the image on the front page. But yeah, that gives us like a little bit of credibility,
mm-hmm.
I guess. And I mean, we're not gonna stop selling at other places, because some people, I think, do just make purchases like from
mm-hmm.
Amazon because they have Prime or
mm-hmm.
like,
mm-hmm.
that's
they
just
trust
what they're familiar
it.
With.
Yeah,
yeah
mm-hmm.
it's. I think it might be easier for some people to buy from a reputable
mm-hmm.
retailer than just from a random website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, but we want to be everywhere too.
A couple of questions.
Hi, I'm Allison Trujillo. I'm the production manager of Cloudshares, and I just the other thing that I think is really important with the Amazon and Kobo and Nook experience with uploading our digital subscriptions, despite like maybe not as well, like if they don't do as well, is that they also include digital rights management, which mm-hmm. is not something that our like when we sell EPUBs on our website, they don't include them. Mm-hmm. The digital rights management at the end of the day is really important to making sure that people aren't like downloading it and then giving it to all of their friends mm-hmm. because that's always
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. that's kind of I think the drawback of PDFs mm-hmm. is that you don't have the
right.
digital rights
the
management attached to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other
yeah.
one.
You said that you have them as .mobi files.
Yep.
Do you get someone to convert that professionally for you?
Amazon converts it. If
it does?
Yeah. So if you upload an EPUB to Amazon, it automatically converts it into a MOBI file.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Amazon does not want any other files on Amazon except
okay.
for MOBI files. Yeah.
And we do
yeah.
ours, so our publisher does it. When we send the PDF for the print, we send them all the metadata and they convert mm-hmm. them for us.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. iBooks does something similar too. When you upload it to iBooks, it changes the format a little bit.
Oh,
yeah, they have their own like proprietary like file format kind of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
As far as the EPUB and MOBI files go, how much artwork do your magazines include much artwork, and is that affected by those different types of formats?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah, we have only cover art, so I
yeah.
can't speak
yeah.
to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like having photos in the nonfiction, just putting that out there, but it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Does anybody know the answer to that? Does anybody work with a lot of art?
Yeah, it's just text.
Yeah.
Text. So that's one of the reasons that we've never done something like that. I'm from Brick Magazine, and the photography and our
do you do a PDF then?
We do ours through Kobo, which creates a PDF that
for
I can't
you.
See how it's any different than just a PDF. It doesn't
yeah.
even link from the table of contents or anything. So.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess we do Kobo because of the digital rights management.
Okay.
Seeing how many people do just sending out PDFs sort of makes sense. You know?
Mm-hmm. Because we know how to do that, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Kobo meant digital rights. Like, how does it work?
Yeah.
It's, I think it's a unique user
yeah.
kind of thing.
There's like a digital watermark.
I think it's about unique users, and we don't do it. We decided
yeah.
we would rather have them out there right now at this nascent stage of things.
Yeah.
And we trust our people.
Yeah.
Which might be very naive, and we thought if somebody's sharing our, you know, EPUB,
yeah.
then we have another reader.
Yeah,
you know, maybe
right.
they'll subscribe.
Right.
We're taking the glass half full approach.
Well, it's funny because I just got last week someone ordered a digital copy of the spring issue, and then I don't know, a couple hours later she ordered it again, and I thought, she accidentally ordered it twice, and I refunded it, and I thought, oh, actually, maybe she's trying to be honest. Maybe she, you know, bought one for herself, and then maybe she bought one for her nephew, and was I don't know, but I just thought. Well, if you forward it to somebody, you know, so we lost $5, you know.
We publish a lot of art, and so going ebook only is not an option. And I think in general, like, we care a lot about the form and the layout, and we want to preserve that. And I've been looking for a platform to share the PDF on, so it doesn't have to be on our website, partly because I don't think that I want people to be sharing the file in that way, but partly also I think it gives it a different feel if you have, like, you know, a library you go to and you're picking through your books and you open it up on a tablet or on a computer versus, like, downloading a PDF and opening it and reading it through Adobe.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of those platforms, the ones that I've seen, you know, it's like you can flip through them, like Cineo
right,
is an
right,
example
yeah.
of how, like, you get a different
yeah.
feeling like,
yeah.
as if you're reading a book. But I haven't found any good ones or affordable ones.
For PDFs?
Yeah,
we actually don't do, the only one we don't manage to ourselves is the PDF, and Andrew Lipstein started.
Oh, Zeros and Ones.
Zeros and Ones,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And so he does a beautiful, I will say, an absolutely beautiful job. And if you go there now, our new issue went up yesterday.
Yeah.
But he does a great job. He's in an amazing range of journals that he has there for PDFs and.
But then people are still just downloading them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking for something where you wouldn't download it. You'd have to log in and read the PDF on a separate on a platform.
Oh, okay.
That could keep it on that platform so that you actually don't just have.
I don't know
it.
If that's an option there. That's a good question.
Can I? Can I want to interject. You can, I think this is a common misconception that you can't put images in ebooks. You can put images in ebooks. Yeah. So there's, yeah, it's still pretty like beta, but it's EPUB 3 is like the new, for like lack of a better term, like the coding for the ebook. It's called EPUB 3 now, and that's what allows these things called enhanced ebooks, which are like images that have links in them that you click it and it takes you somewhere else, or like a video that's embedded in your ebook. You can do it, it just takes a lot longer than just like clicking on InDesign, like the convert to EPUB button.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can do that. You can link to things, images, videos, all sorts of weird interactive content. And there are smaller publishers that are focusing on enhanced ebooks, and they're not making a lot of money, and they're not lasting for very long, because I don't think people are at the point where they're ready to look at enhanced EPUBs, or they're confused about what they are, or they're not sure like how they read them. But there are people that are doing that. It's more like an art project at this point.
So I know like the New Yorker has like an app that you have to log in. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's actually real cheap. that's really cheap. Yeah. Yeah, that's really surprising, but awesome. Yeah.
Not a
they aren't instantly able to access the magazine on the app, but within like 2 or 3 days they are. So that's an annual back end thing.
Through the app, like, does this bypass the issue of like having a Mobi or an EPUB or something because it's then proprietary? So it's DRM protected within the app, or so then you can only access it?
And I think that's going to be kind of something to watch over the next few years, is the battle between EPUB and Mobi files and apps. That's a huge question right now. Whether people are going to continue downloading apps at the same rate they're doing right now, because it's like it's a thing, it's like a trendy thing now, or is it going to be that they're just going to start moving towards the place that has everything versus the place that has a lot of customized, more in-depth features that are specific to different publications? So yeah, I think that's yet to be determined which one is going to win out. So it's probably a good idea to be in as many places as you can, so that when one wins, you're at least there already.
Yeah.
Question? No, we just never felt like they told us they were going to like promote us. I don't know. We are in a position now where I am a little sad that we're not selling on Amazon, because everyone's on Amazon. But for us to do that, we would have to create a totally separate EPUB.
Right. Right, the resources.
But I think we need to actually be
on both platforms,
but we're not.
Right. And all of these things are fairly cheap compared to like printing a journal, but the human resources is a huge cost.
Mm-hmm.
Conversion doesn't take that long, but still, if you're converting a lot of back issues at a time,
mm-hmm.
or just like if you have to do things manually, that's a lot of time that people
are
taking.
And is there a great demand for spring 2010 issue?
Right.
I don't
think
so.
No.
So.
No.
I had two quick questions. So are you all using InDesign to formulate your posts? Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's a yes.
The second is, it's interesting to me that there's resistance to including images in digital mags, because John has been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be, there are some adjustments that you can make on the image side. I don't know how many of you employ graphic designers or how many of your layout people began in graphic design, but there are some adjustments that you can do in terms of changing the DPI, changing the bleed on the image, changing, you know, how the image fits on the page, where you don't necessarily have to sacrifice layout for image quality, especially like you're saying, as these EPUBs are developed. So it's interesting to me that people are resisting that digital image, because there are things you could do outside of just the layout portion within the image itself. And if you have access, especially if you're university affiliated, you guys have a graphic design department, ask those people. I'm a BFA student working for an independent nonprofit press, Stillhouse Press out in Northern Virginia, and we have relied heavily on bringing in, you know, student contractors or learning press. So if you have those resources and know people that may be able to manipulate the image on the image side, I would start there before getting overwhelmed with like the new EPUB format, because there are some quick fixes that you can do on that side.
Once you manipulate the image, and how are you releasing it? That's the issue. But it seems like the EPUBs are still like not quite there yet.
They are. People just aren't doing it right.
Okay.
That's
if you open an enhanced ebook in like iBooks, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, they're.
I build enhanced ebooks.
Yeah.
Scratch.
They can be as
and
cool as you want them to be.
Actually, my gosh, I have kind of a related question. I do build enhanced ebooks, and I actually have more trouble. Images are actually really easy. What I have trouble with most is poetry.
Yeah, right.
Don't we all?
Reflow,
yeah. Right.
Home with, like,
yes.
Three tabs in the middle of the line.
Yeah.
And the second they up the size beyond, say, the original 12. Times New Roman and switch it,
that
you get all these wacky line breaks. Do you deal with that? I've been turning them into images, or do you just do fixed layout?
I think that's what a lot of people do, is that they make them images if they're too complicated.
We personally just put them in.
Yeah.
Just put them in and just.
I like
that because it's more accessible.
Right.
If it's under user.
Yeah.
Because you don't lose all.
Right.
So, okay.
And then they're still using the ebook as an ebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's
a small. Right. The form is.
Right.
But it's just like the second somebody hits plus twice on the font size,
yeah.
The whole poem just falls apart
at
the seams. To be fair, I've only been on staff for about a year, but I've actually never had a problem because we don't necessarily publish things that are that.
Yeah, in our print journal, we still keep it. It's all sterile. It's, I mean, things will be shifted, but it's,
What about you guys? Well, we're doing the PDF, so it's not a problem.
Yeah, then you keep all the formatting that they want.
And that's probably the other reason that I haven't graduated to something else, because the PDF preserves the formatting.
Yeah.
And
it keeps all the font choices that you have, too, and, it looks like the book.
It looks like the book.
Yeah.
I've come to love left justified poetry.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We're going to move on to, we were talking earlier about, you were saying, do you get more traffic, having your stuff on Amazon or those other platforms, through that. So in terms of that, how do you guys go about your circulation building? Do you have campaigns? Do you send stuff out? Do you put your stuff on other sites? Do you have mailings? What's your way of getting more people to see your stuff?
We, let's see.
Is this
it's
sort of
the never-ending challenge.
Flossing?
Are you flossing?
Yeah, we are trying to do all those things. We don't buy other lists. We are lucky in that we have things like the Breadloaf Writers Conference with whom we share offices, and we're able to work with them a little bit for their captive audience. But really, I'd love to hear from you guys about conversion. I mean, we've built Twitter, and we're working on all the social media, but great, you have all these thousands of followers. How do you convert? So that's kind of our focus
convert
right now.
Convert them to subscribers.
And not that that's the only way to count your success, but we'd love to get the print journal and the digital into more people's hands. So we do some marketing, we do some direct marketing. We are not on Amazon and Nook. We're very contained. We find that direct mail gets some response. I think it's much easier and much less expensive to keep your existing subscribers than it is to capture new ones. So we do a lot to work with our existing subscribers and keep them true blue, things like that. So I'd love to hear from you guys about what you do.
I work for Ruminate Magazine. I'm the managing editor. Oh. We're really small and very contained, like you guys. But what we found is that we actually made a new marketing campaign for emails. We realized that our readers really like letters, but contemplative and not actually a direct ask, but more on the side.
Interesting.
So we did this Lent email because we're faith involved, and it was really interesting because we didn't specifically say buy this or subscribe now. We said when you subscribe, this is what happens with us and etc. And we got I don't know how many new subscribers just because of that email. So I think looking at your audience and seeing how they respond to certain emails and testing, thought that was
that's like amazing. The loveliest piece of marketing I've heard of in many AWEs.
Yeah.
We were just talking earlier, somebody at Harvard came up with this great idea to bundle 4 New England journals, 3 in Boston and us in Vermont, and we offered a sort of a special price. It was $70 for 4 journals, and some publish biannually, some are quarterly, but the total was $70, and I was all in and skeptical.
Yeah, right.
And I was thinking, if they're not buying us for $35, why are they going to buy us for $70? Mm-hmm. And we got a really a nice number of subscriptions, and I'm trying to understand the process behind it and the response. So we were bundled with, I think, our connecting wire was New England.
Yeah, it definitely was.
So any other thoughts you guys came up with on that? It really was nice. Mm-hmm. To see that they responded to the package.
Mm-hmm. Well, were you sending this letter to your existing subscribers?
Not existing subscribers, but people who signed up for email list.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, and how did they sign up for the email list? Was it from your website?
Yeah, we got it on our website, and then I think we have another way to sign up, too. But, through Shopify. So our store's on Shopify.
and they can say if they accept marketing or not. So then we also email those people, and they're also submittable. We have an option for them to subscribe to our newsletter, and they're thrown on that list. So the list is going out to like 4,000 or something people. So I just thought it was so cool.
That's great.
That's how they responded.
I mean, circulation billing, so Erin, my marketing assistant, is here right now. She's tweeting. And, so we do marketing on a lot of different things and try to funnel everyone in. I think now the marketing jargon is, like, someone's journey. And it's, like, if they start on social or, and then we're pushing on social our blog posts. And then on our blog is a button where they can hit subscribe if they're at that point, or they can hit like subscribe to our newsletter. And then if they're on the newsletter, we do what we call like series letters, where if we're pushing a certain subscription at a certain point in a year, we will send out, I don't know how many, like 10 in a series, 10 emails over the course of several weeks. And it'll go like the first email is just casual, like, oh, look at these blog posts that you might be interested in. The second one is still pretty casual, and the third one is like a soft ask. And then we'll do another casual one, and then a harder ask. And that works really well. But yeah, so it's trying to get them from one platform to the other to eventually paying money.
Does anybody find success with like ad trades among other?
Not really. It's a nice thing to do, and I'm always, if somebody reaches out and wants to do an exchange, I'm happy to do it. We should do it. Let's do it.
They're not.
Yeah, I'm glad to do it, but I don't think it results in anything. It's a nice way to fill your blank pages at the end. I mean, where it might work is for contests.
Right.
I do believe that it must generate something for contests.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, my just kind of boilerplate Colorado Review subscribe ad, I'll send that out sometimes when I'm not at a place to promote a contest. But and that's the thing, though. You have no way of knowing. I mean, we don't have that how did you hear about us kind of thing.
We obviously place ads, too, for our contest, too. We're running our contest right now, actually. Stop by our booth. We have discount codes for our contest. So we do a lot of our advertising during the contest time, and we have, like, a link on the ad, and then in Google Analytics, you can track, like, how many people are going to that link. So if you create a unique URL for a specific page on your website that, like, redirects to a more general page, then you can look on Google Analytics to see how many people are hitting that. And if you make a unique ad for every ad that you're, or a unique URL for every ad you're putting out, you can see which ads were successful and which copy on which ads were successful. So you can A/B test ad copy if you want to. In like 1 month, put out an ad that says something. And then the next month, put out an ad in the same place that has a little bit different wording. And then you can start to test to see what is actually working or not.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the other things that we found that really a really rich place to mine is the people who submit to you. They know you. They obviously like you because they've submitted to you. You know, we get between 7,000 and 8,000 submissions a year. The vast majority fiction, and we publish, you know, maybe 24 stories a year, in fiction. So there are all those other people out there, and they, I find, are a really great community to be in touch with, and they will subscribe. And also, we do charge a fee, and we will waive our fee for subscribers. Yeah. And so that's always a good way to promote your subscriptions, and that has been one of the very best places I found. You know, better than any list that you could buy. People already. You know, they already know you and love you. So who better to go to?
Do you automatically add their email to your mailing list, or do you send out a separate email?
No, we don't, but we have it, and we can download a list if we want to send them something.
Okay.
And be in touch with them or make them a special offer, that kind of thing. And they're very responsive to it, because if they've submitted to you once and you've sent them a very nice note, it's likely that they're going to want to submit to you again. They're already on your side, so they're really good people to capitalize on.
In terms of lists, sorry, really fast. You said you don't buy any, but do you guys buy or share any? And if so, who do you decide? Like, do you pair it with like someone that's like you, or how do you go about that?
Gosh, that was really such a bummer last year when I can't even think of their name
Direct
now.
Communications.
Yes, when they just. Do you guys know what we're talking about? It was the list exchange company in Vermont.
Yeah.
Direct.com or Direct.com. And I think they worked with a lot of us and they went out of business. And so we were just sort of like
listless.
Just crickets chirping.
Yeah.
And there's a new place now called Info Group. And I think
I
think that they're, you know, looking to build with us. But at any rate, the answer to the question is for the Colorado Prize for Poetry, I'll contact a list management service and, you know, ask for names. And I typically do it on an exchange basis. Poets and writers, I'll get a list of addresses from poets and writers or Academy of American Poets. Sometimes I've done it with, I don't know, I can't even think right now, like some other magazine that
seems,
yeah, poetry magazine. Yeah.
Something
that seems to make sense particularly with the contest, and we run a short fiction contest. So sometimes I even just do it on a one-to-one basis. I'll just email somebody at like Prairie Schooner and say, do you want to exchange? And we could do that. I haven't done it for direct mail to increase circulation. I just haven't found that to be super effective.
Yeah. We do like one direct mail campaign a year. At one point in time, we were doing multiple, and the list we were buying or renting or exchanging got so, like, fatigued from us sending them junk mail multiple times a year that we weren't getting, like, any return at all. So we took a year off, didn't do any direct mail, did one last year. It was, like, not average successful. It was still below average, and it cost so much money.
It cost so much money.
And, I mean, like, you're getting maybe a couple hundred people that'll be potential loyal subscribers, but probably not.
Mm-hmm. In the industry, you probably all know this. I mean, CLMP has been telling us this for years, but it's the 1%. You know, like it's a successful campaign if you get 1%. And so if you'd have to send out so
like
many.
Like 25,000.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense to do.
No, it's hard to break even on a mail campaign to make back what you're spending on printing it and buying or renting the lists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, it sounded like your email campaign, you have a lot of emails and like
2
or something?
Yeah, I have 2 or 3. A lot of people unsubscribe. Aaron, can I answer that question actually?
No.
Yeah, and we did a survey a few years ago of our readers, and they love being contacted via email. Yeah, email works. Social has been working for us lately. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is one of Jeffrey's favorite things to talk about. Do you guys, any three of you, do renewal at birth when you when you get a new subscriber? If you guys don't know, renewal at birth is when someone is a new subscriber and instantly they get a link saying, do you want to subscribe for 2 years? And they get a discount because they're doing it for 2 years. And he likes to say all the time that anticipation is always better than the actual thing that you're getting, no matter how good that thing is. I don't know, you know, how much that's true, but, you know, people, they're already subscribing. They have made the decision. It's like when you buy something online, you're like really excited because you just decided to buy it and it's going to come. And so if you're saying buy 2 years because you're really excited about it right now, instead of waiting for them to get like 1, 2, 3 issues and then be like, I don't know if I'm going to renew next year. So renewing at birth gives them an opportunity to renew for a discount when they are still really, really excited about the possibility of getting this journal in the mail, so, or digital. So do you guys do that?
We offer 1 and 2 year subscriptions at the same time, so we don't
differentiate.
We don't do that, but we do when it comes shrink wrapped into your mailbox. There, right there, is an offer saying renew now.
Nice.
At a great. It's the only. We've just changed our whole structure. We no longer have codes to put in, and you know, discount code. If it's a blue moon in January, you know, we just have renew and renew early, and that seems to have gotten a few more renewals than I would have thought. So it was
nice. Okay.
Worth putting that in there.
Yeah, and we do that same thing. And actually, I hadn't thought about. I was feeling very guilty because I don't do renewal at birth, but I was thinking, you just articulated an interesting issue with that, which is that we also always offer. Simultaneously, that you know, 1, 2, and 3 years.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm thinking you're right. Like, why wouldn't they have asked for 2 years or 3 years in the beginning?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But
we do, and I can't quite figure out because Jeffrey was just talking to us about renewal of birth. One thing we do because of the fees that we charge, if you submit as a subscriber, when we reply, thank you so much for your manuscript. We do offer them a renewal link right there, so that's a renewal at toddler stage.
What about you?
We do 1, 2, and 3.
One, two, three. So you don't do the renewal at birth per se.
No, but we do. So we have like the carrier sheets, which is the thing in the little bag that you get, and then we have like a renewal series, and it's like if you're about to get your last issue in your subscription, 2 months beforehand, you'll get an email that says, "Hey, you're about to." Expire, just FYI. And then if they don't renew, they'll get something in the mail. And then if they still don't renew just a few weeks before the issue comes out, they'll get another email. And then they'll get the issue. And then after the issue, they'll get one more email and one more little print piece. So those are successful, though.
They are for us as
well. Yeah.
And pairing them up, the printing reminder and the email.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to see, somebody has to see something
so many times.
Like I think it's 7 times before they'll act on it.
Yep.
So we try not, we're really nominal contactors.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to find that balance between annoying you and letting you know we love you, which is where people renew, is what we try to find the balance in.
Yeah.
Preparing those has made a big difference.
A huge difference. Mm-hmm. And we offer the discount when you renew via one of those things, too. And that makes a big difference, too. Sometimes, though, people will, like, see that offer and then go to our website and then
and
pay the
price.
Higher price.
Exactly. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
For New England Review?
Well, for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should let somebody who does it speak to that. We do an original nonfiction piece once a month, but it's not of the caliber that you guys do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our solos are, we really love doing that. Because there's not really a good home, especially now that like literary publishing doesn't publish short story collections very much. There's not really like a home for long form nonfiction and fiction. So, yeah, the solos are, I mean, they're a great opportunity for writers, and they're a great opportunity to, like, read those things. We used to market it as, like, oh, it's great to, like, read when you're commuting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just short enough, but it's not too short. Yeah, so, we like having that extra content. And that's, again, that's also part of, like, the funnel. If they're interested in that, they might be interested in the journal, too. Sometimes they're not, but, sometimes they like both, and sometimes they want everything.
It's really just manpower for us. I'd
love
to do that. I'd love to have a piece up every Monday morning.
Right.
We pull out from our archives and we post every week we post something from our archives. Every week we post a digital audio file that's a reading from the Breadloaf Writers Conference. But that's content that exists. It's really nice to be able to share it. And I'd love to do an original every week, but it's there's two of us. There are two of us in the office. So
Yeah.
Do you like post on your website or like on Facebook?
On our website, every week on our website, we have new. We try to keep content coming out, but it's hard to pick the original content. And if there's one more piece that we want to share with the world, we put it in the print issue. So that's a good question. Taking that one home with me.
I should probably know this, but do you guys have blogs?
We do.
That you run?
Okay. We do.
Yeah.
Did everyone hear that question? She asked if we if we both have blogs, and we do.
Do you see a lot of traffic on there?
Not necessarily, but it does keep the website, you know, refreshed and so and one of the things that one of the reasons we do the blog is I have our staff, our interns, write blog posts about once a week. And and so it does double duty. It and sometimes they do write things that end up nothing's exactly gone viral, but some of them do get more traffic than others. But it's so good for them to practice writing a blog post, and then they end up if they do the internship for a while, they'll have a few blog posts under their belt, and it's good for their portfolios and gets them more invested in the organization.
Yeah, that's great.
We have no grad students.
You should get some grad students. They're great.
Graduate program.
Did you have a question?
I was going to just speak to the AIR online. We specifically found 5 to 6 years ago that we just had so many submissions, and we didn't know what to do with them. And we were, 2 years out, and our question was in the magazine. And that's what we chose to do in the Companion Online magazine. And it's great. I mean, we literally published double
So how do your online authors, do they ever express disappointment that they didn't make it into print?
It's funny, yeah, we were really worried about that. And I can tell, I mean, quite honestly, since we've been doing it, and which I think is 6 years, I think we've had no more than like 6 people say, I refuse.
Oh,
I really
that's great. Yeah.
I know.
That was my question.
That's great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think what's so interesting about that is that there was a time many years ago when it wasn't good to be published online. You wanted to be in print. And I wonder if at some point in the near future, if we're hitting a tipping point where people would rather be online than in print. A few years ago, I decided to take our book reviews out of the print journal because I wanted more room for creative nonfiction. And I thought, well, I'll just put them on the website. I'll put them on our website. And then I was thinking, well, I need to kind of, defend this. And so I was saying, oh, but you'll get, the book reviews will get so much wider an audience, and people who are searching for these books will they'll land on them. But versus being in, stuck in 1,300 print copies of a magazine, it was occurring to me like, oh, that's an interesting argument. I mean, I wonder if that is true also for the fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. If really people would be better served, if the writers and the content would be better served if it were all online. I don't know. I really like doing a print journal. So.
Just to share, I'm at Black Mountain Institute. We do Witness Magazine in Las Vegas. And so what we do is we have one print issue a year and two online only issues a year. And they all have different deadlines. And it says clearly, you can submit to anything you want, but you're submitting to the online only issue or the print issue. And it seems like, I think that it doesn't seem to make a difference. It's more like.
Oh.
But they self-select, you're saying.
They do self-select. So it's not like they've gotten
to move.
Relegated to, to the uncool island, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And the print issue is also, the story, everything that's in the print issue is also on our website.
That was a question I had for really everybody. How much of your current print issue do you guys release from behind the paywall?
And what is weird for, I'm trying to figure this out myself because I'm new to it, but, you know, our print issue is like, I don't know, $8 or $12, but then if you go to our website, you can read the exact same content for free. Not, you should not pay.
Yeah.
So, like, you get it for free online, or you could pay to have the nice pretty thing that's under.
Yeah. Because people don't necessarily want to read it online. I think that's still true.
Mm-hmm.
To answer Marcy's question, I try for each issue to put one story, one essay, and three or four poems up on the website for free. And it does a couple of things. My main purpose for doing that is I want people who are considering submitting to the magazine to have a good sense of what it is that we're publishing.
Yeah,
because they probably won't buy a sample copy. This doesn't happen very often. And it prevents the total mismatch. It doesn't totally prevent that. I don't know why I said that. That's my hope. That's my
phrase.
Fantasy.
Right.
And then, and I don't want it to be completely about this, but it does celebrate some, a few mm-hmm. people, and it's not a prize or anything, but it's just a little bonus, like, oh, and we're going to feature you on the website.
Yeah.
So it's a nice thing we can do for our authors.
We do that as well, and we were talking about marketing before, and this has been working really well for us. We created a friends and family link, so when you're up, your story is up on our website, and they're so excited, we're like, share this link with all your friends and family, and hopefully they will, first of all, see the piece, most importantly online, because mm-hmm. it's a friend or a fan or family, and then they can buy at a discount that issue or a mm-hmm. subscription. So really marketing to your own people has been the most lucrative way to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, oh, sorry, one second. On social media, you were saying like how to take those numbers and turn them into subscribers. So do you ever put anything on there that's like a sneak peek of a poem or a piece that
mm-hmm.
you have?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, we do that. I have two people managing our Twitter feed, and as an issue is coming out or is out, they'll put little teaser pieces on, links to that, or
cool.
just lines. Yeah, lines from the new issue. And again, I can't say it's wildly effective. I don't see the, subscription
right.
orders just pouring in. But again, it's a nice thing we can do for our writers.
Mm-hmm.
To help promote them and
we do one piece available online per month, and then the next issue comes out 3 months later, so I pick three pieces from the issue to put online, and I've had authors ask to be one of those people. They get really excited.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah, and then they can share it on their social media.
Yes.
And the friends and family thing, that's great. That's
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I
that's
love it
awesome.
When they share on media.
Yeah.
I asked one of our poets who was
right.
just posted. I said, okay, we're going to tweet it. Do you have a Twitter handle? And
he
said, I don't do Twitter. My wife won't let me. But other than him, they really love to share it on their own media, which is a great way to just build this web.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who are in the inner circle, and they're excited.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone who didn't hear that, she was saying it's like also a friends and family link for staff, so for their family to have something with their name in it. Did you have a question?
No.
Sorry.
Mitch?
Yes.
Does anybody know of any software that just I'm going to look into the Zapier, but I'm wondering if there's any software that manages can keep track of the subscriptions and when they're expiring. Maybe send out emails to remind people, that kind of thing.
Okay, well, I don't do anything fancy. Mine is FileMaker.
That's
and
exactly
you know
what
this.
We use.
But it doesn't. And if you're a real FileMaker wizard, you can probably create some scripts. I mean, I know you can. that would, every time you launch it, it says, hey, you should probably contact these 67 people. You could do that. I kind of do it manually. I just search for who is expiring with the fall 2015 issue. My FileMaker database is my, it has three kinds of people in it. It's my writers, my subscribers, and my donors. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those people are all three things at the same time. So that's my main database, and
that's been working. It's precisely what we do.
Yeah.
And you can generate letters, renewal letters and things like that in concert with those three lists and the expiration dates. It's cumbersome, but it feels old school, but it works, and we haven't found anything better except the college is not going to be supporting it much longer. So let us know if you find anything else.
Oh, no, you have to keep using it.
We will.
I mean, even though they're not supporting it, I mean, you know how to use it. I always think the thing about FileMaker is that it's sort of like how we talk about our brains. We only use about 10% of it, and I think I'm only using about 10% of FileMaker's capabilities. So in my spare time, I'm going to go to some seminar and become a FileMaker guru. But at any rate.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. Typically, the new email management platforms will do what you're talking about and do database management. And you can segment your email list into groups.
Yeah.
So writers, contributors, subscribers, donors. You can set up autoresponders. So like, as soon as somebody responds, your auto email says, okay, 10 months from their subscribe date, it'll automatically send an email that says, oh, your subscription is about to expire, it's time to renew. You have to set those things up and tell it when to send the email, but it will do that.
Mm-hmm.
It will do what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an email management system, basically, is what will do all of that stuff.
I'd like to really recommend a service called ChargeBee. You're looking for something to help manage subscriptions, renewals, invoicing, automated emails. The best part about it is that it's free to start. So if you can figure out the interface, which isn't that difficult, it's a really strong solution. I've been using it for about half a year. Not for a print publication, for a digital one, but it works regardless of what people are subscribing to.
What's it called?
The name is Charge B.
Charge
B.
Okay. Charge B. Yes.
You can also look into, I don't know what platform you're using on your website. We use WordPress at Newfound, and we use WooCommerce tools. WooCommerce. It's basically like a bunch of plugins that
mm-hmm.
kind of do whatever you
right.
want. You can have the plugins. The negative of that is it can be pricey, but actually now these days there's a lot of websites that are offering them like a one-stop download thing for $5 a month. And actually we go to a site where they offer for free, all the stuff for free, and with a recommended donation to the website. So you have all these like 200 something plugins. So if you want to manage lists or whatever you need to do, even stuff like, they could sign up for your mailing list, and then that information kicks to it's all cross. It's by the one developer.
Yeah, that's basically what we do too. It's just like a more expensive version of it, really. We use Drupal for our back end, which is a lot like WordPress, but more annoying. And so we had like a developer build our custom back end, but then they just like combined all these other existing like widget things. And then just amplify their capabilities. But yeah, all that stuff you can find for free too.
Jetpack is pretty good.
Yeah, Jetpack is great. Yeah.
What's it called?
Jetpack.
It's like WooCommerce. It's just a giant bundle of widgets.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit ignorant on this, but I know a lot of people use WordPress. Does anyone use Squarespace for literary websites and workflow? I know it's very user friendly.
Yeah. WordPress.
Yeah.
No.
I want to know how people send their contracts out.
Oh, we use EchoSign. I love EchoSign. We also do them in print, though, too.
Yeah. Do you?
Yeah. I print them out, even if they send them via EchoSign, because our accounts payable department requires print copies of everything.
Okay.
So,
but you can send them to your writers printed. You send them.
If they're in America, I'll send them printed, just because I want them to have that, like, formality. But if they're overseas or if they are, like, moving around constantly, I just send them via EchoSign, which is an Adobe platform, super secure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
Again, FileMaker. I export my contract template to PDF, and I email it to the writers. But it's, you know, it's not a PDF with fillable fields.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
What about you?
Google Forms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty easy. The only thing is that you don't get, like, physical signature.
Uh-huh.
But it's
right.
basically
right.
like an online one where they just put in their name. It's basically like sign your name to agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We use Submittable for our contracts.
That's what we do. That's
a category.
Yep.
That it works pretty well, actually, because they often have to submit on Submittable anyway. So
exactly.
I know. Yeah.
We do the same thing, and they can upload their W-9s, and it just seems like seems it is. I'm just curious about what other people were doing.
I didn't know you could do that.
I can help you.
So we have a few more minutes. Does anyone have any last questions that they've been dying to ask? Or any advice that you have to share?
Things you did this year that surprised you because you actually
yes.
got subscriptions or responses
yes.
or some great new discovery.
Yes.
We get a lot of prison mail. So for the Democratic Mailing Campaign over the summer, we spoke about, like, Massachusetts prisons, and also high school programs like literature and language arts. And we got a lot of good response from that. Not a lot of subscriptions, but
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was prison mailings in high schools, right? In case anyone didn't hear. Yeah.
Well, we didn't print an issue of our journal last year. And then we got 150 emails asking us where it was.
That's good.
Wow.
Unmarketed.
That's right.
Well, and that's one of the things that, really, I mean, that reminds me of something that I've been thinking about for this panel, which is, you know, I'm not even entirely sure how much demand there is for a digital subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not yet mailed out the spring copy or the spring issue of the magazine digitally. We just, you know, the intern who does that, I can do it, but I just don't want to. And the intern who's really good at it hasn't been. We had a snowstorm and school got canceled, and then there was spring break. And at any rate, it hasn't gone out yet, and I haven't heard a single word from anybody who's
yeah.
supposed to get a digital copy. And I just think that's
this
interesting. Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, for the digital, I you know, nobody is saying where's my copy, and so I don't know, like, spending all this time and twisting ourselves in these positions, I don't know how much demand there really is. I mean, I'm doing it for a few reasons. I think it addresses the disability issue for the NEA because
yeah.
for low vision readers,
right.
it is
right.
available, so that's a good reason to do it, but I don't think people are just clamoring for it.
Sometimes people will buy a digital plus print subscription and not give us their email.
Yeah.
And then we have no way to give it to them. And
yeah.
they don't email us to ask where it is.
Yeah, well, that's
like,
okay.
Okay, well.
Well, and the thing with MailChimp is you can see when you send it out, like, how many people open
it.
Sometimes not even everybody opens it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, okay.
I know if I have both, I never read the digital.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's also, there's also an argument there, though, for the both. That's a salesman trick. So, like, if you have two different products and they're far apart in price, people will pick the lower one because it's cheaper. But if you have, like, a product that's $15 and a product that's $45, that's, so, like, $15 is digital only.
45 is print, 50 is print plus digital. Everyone will click the $50 one, mm-hmm. or the $45 one, and nobody will take the cheaper one. So it's also just a way to manipulate people into giving more money. Yeah.
Any final thoughts or questions before we wrap up? Yes.
Yeah, right. You've got your parallel.
Yeah. Well, launching our new website has created that problem for basically every set of records we have. So we used to FileMaker historically also, and we're still using FileMaker for our donors because we haven't figured out a way to collect all like the nuances of donor records in our website yet. But then that means that we're using our website for some things and we're using
mm-hmm.
FileMaker for other things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we're always going to have to keep FileMaker now
mm-hmm.
forever just because it has all of the historical donor information. Yeah, and that's something that we've just kind of accepted. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
but I want another option, too.
It kind of seems like you ought to be able to create little fields in FileMaker to
yeah.
collect those nuances, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
We're currently in Donor Perfect, but and that's been like for years since way before I was here. But we're moving to Salesforce for our donor and membership database.
Mm-hmm.
And I use Salesforce at my old job, and it's great. I it's got some quirks like everything else, but it's a really good platform to use for your donors. And we're linking it up to our new website, so hopefully everything that comes through will go directly into their Salesforce record, you know. And yeah, it's a lot of transferring over from
mm-hmm.
Donor Perfect, so that's going to be a little, but
mm-hmm.
but it should be good. I'm excited.
All set.
Yeah.
I think we're all set.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you guys
yeah.
for coming,
yes.
and thank you, Drew, so
thank
much.
You.